By now, I hope you know I'm somebody who likes a little bit of interaction between me and you. So I'm going to start with a very easy question. But I do want answers. I don't want blank looks, right? If you don't give me answers, I'll pick on people. How many of you at home have got a picture that's hanging on a wall? Oh, hands waving. Good, that's great. Now, second question. How often do you take that one of those pictures off the wall and admire the nail that it's hanging on? No, why not? You see, one of the things is, if that nail wasn't up to its job, you wouldn't be able to look at the picture because it'd keep falling down. Tonight, when I hang those numbers up, knowing I was going to ask you that question, I had a good look up there behind that board. I thought, that's a docker of a nail. Right? So here I am, asking you about pictures and nails. Why am I doing that? Well, I want to give us our second reading. And maybe by the time I get to the end of it, you'll have a clue. I'm going to read from Matthew 22, verses 34 to verse 40. And it's an incident in the life of Jesus. And it starts, "But when the Pharisees heard that he had silenced the Sadducees, they gathered together. Then one of them, a lawyer, asked him a question, testing him and saying, 'Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law?' Jesus said to him, 'You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. The second is like it. You shall love your neighbour as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets.'" Now, where's the nail? Where's the picture? Why did I ask you about nails and pictures? You know, we used to have, at one time, in schools, in chapels, in churches, in courtrooms, something often hung up on the wall. Remember what it was? Something religious. There's big arguments in America that it's still in some courtrooms. Some text. Actually, if you want a clue, there's a dirty big one in there in the schoolroom. The Ten Commandments. Right? Now, I've had something of a quandary for some time. Why do we take Ten Commandments, which in answer to this question Jesus didn't even mention, and stick them on the wall? I have never gone anywhere and seen these two commandments hung up on the wall. But Jesus said, the Ten Commandments and every other Ten Commandment hangs on those two. If you can't understand the Ten till you get to grips with the two. For some reason, we ignore these two. And perhaps tonight I want to examine briefly why not. They are the stability behind those ten. And in fact, to be honest, it's the first one that is the strength of the second one. So let's think about that greater one tonight. And that commandment is, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. So the first question, how do we define love? When we say you shall love the Lord your God. How many of you love ice cream? Michael does. Yeah, some honest people, yeah. Do you love ice cream in the same way you should love God? Alright? What about your pets, if you've got any? How, you love your dog. Some people love their jobs. That might be a bit harder, but some people do love their jobs. Some of us love the house we live in. Most of us love our family. So, how do you tell the difference between the love we should have for God and the love we have for food or for friends? Well, I've got something to share with you later. I'll give them out later, but this article was written in the middle of February. to celebrate Valentine's Day. And the title is, Do We Value Love As Much As Eskimos Value Snow? Eskimos have 50 different words for love. For snow. They have 50 different words for snow. They value it so much. We English only have one. Other cultures have more. The Greeks, for example, have four that are used in the New Testament and one or two more that aren't. The one that is used here and commonly throughout the New Testament is the strongest word of them all. It's the Greek word agape. And it's very difficult to bring into English because you've got to describe it first. And it's such a strong one, it's hard to describe. But where I tend to go for is to say that agape means sacrificial love. Love that makes you, that where you choose to give up something for someone else. And it is this strong love that we should have for God. But here we face a problem. You see, we are so used to these Ten Commandments that tells us what not to do, we never think about the two that tells us what to do. A friend of mine some years ago was speaking at a university. He was speaking about Christianity, and afterwards a young girl, woman student came up to him and said, look, I don't believe in God, but I'm all right, I've done nothing wrong. He says, what do you mean? She said, well, I've not murdered anybody, I've not stolen anything, and she went through a whole list. She says, I've kept those commandments. He says, look, those are so far down the list, we're not going to bother about them. Let me tell you the one that's at the top of the list. And he said to her, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. And she looked rather disturbed. You see, I think we focus on the ten because of this sense. It's easier to justify ourselves. Well, I've not done that and I've not done that. But what about this one? Have you loved the Lord your God with everything you are? Think about it. And let me read to you another passage. This is another encounter that illustrates this. This is from Luke 18, starting at verse 18. And it says, now a certain ruler asked Jesus, good teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life? So Jesus said to him, why do you call me good? No one is good but one, that is God. You know the commandments, do not commit adultery, do not murder, do not steal, do not bear false witness, honour your father and your mother. And he said, all these I have kept from my youth. So when Jesus heard these things, he said to him, you still lack one thing. Sell all that you have and distribute to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven, and come, follow me. But when he heard this, he became very sorrowful, for he was very rich. That is a picture of a man who thought he could keep the Ten Commandments, but found it very difficult to keep the two. He needed to give up what he trusted in, what he loved more than he loved God, more than he loved the Son of God. And when he was faced with the reality, he went away sad. Many of us are like that. Doing what we can to keep a set of commandments, they still feel there's something missing. Why would he ask this question if keeping these commandments had met his inner needs? Jesus felt for this man, and so he told him not to look at what he hadn't done, but to think about what he needed to be doing. Having to keep the commandments that called him to do something positive seemed to be too difficult for him. Now, I have to say, I was brought up in church circles where the focus was on what you don't do. You may remember it. As I was growing up in the 50s, I heard many times phrases like, don't drink, don't smoke, don't dance. Right? You may remember a similar list. But the other side of the coin. Maybe we can say, I haven't done that. But God's commandment, the greatest commandment, calls us to do something. So I'm going to ask you to do something else. I'm going to read that commandment again. And when I've read it, if you've kept it, stand up. Love the Lord your God with all your soul, with all your heart, and with all your mind. I can't stand up. I don't think any of that's very hard work. It's beyond us. Like the student I mentioned above, we've all failed to keep that commandment. James puts this difference of focus in another way. In James chapter 4 and verse 17, he said to the people he was writing to, therefore to him who knows to do good and does not do it, to him it is sin. How do we understand, why did God give the Ten Commandments then to the Jews? How do we understand them? I actually think he was being merciful. Because he took the bar of what would please him and he lowered it as low as possible to make it easier for them to get over it. Right? No, they didn't do it. They failed. This morning, Mary and me read in the book of Chronicles how they failed so much as Israel. God took them out of the land of Israel for 70 years. They failed to keep those low commandments. One of the hints we get that that was a low bar setting is what Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount. He covered several topics. And he said, you have heard it said, do not do X, do not do Y, do not do Z. But I say to you, if you do A, it's like doing X. And if you do B, it's like doing Y. And if you do C, you might as well do Z. But the big difference between A, B and C and X, Y, Z was this. X, Y, Z was all on the outside of a person. What we do outside. And in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus focused on what we're like on the inside. And what we think. And what we desire in our hearts. And by doing that, he showed the Jews that actually God's bar was higher than the Ten Commandments. And when he told this young man that the greatest commandment was to love the Lord our God with all that we are, he showed him how high that bar was. And simply he says this, and this is why it's the nail. If you keep that commandment, you'll keep them all. If you love God, you'll love your neighbour. If you love your neighbour, you won't rob him. If you love your neighbour, you won't go after his wife. If you love God, you won't worship idols. There's an old saying, you know, and I hope I don't set something going off, but the worst thing you can say to a child is something like, I don't want you to think about pink elephants. Because once you say something like that to them, they start thinking about the very thing you don't want them to think about. And it's the same with sin. It's far better to say to people, focus on God. Learn to love God. Than it is to stay away from that dangerous situation. Well, why then does God give us law? Does he, if he knows we can't keep commandments, why does he give them to us? Paul recognised this problem because he wrote to one church, if there had been a law given which could have given life, truly righteousness would have been by the law. And that comes in Galatians chapter 3, verses 19 to 22. Let me read them. What purpose then does the law serve? It was added because of transgression, until the seed, that is Jesus, should come, to whom the promise was made. And it was appointed through angels by the hand of a mediator. Now, a mediator does not mediate for one only, but God is one. Is the law against the promise of God? Certainly not. But if there had been a law given which could have given life, truly righteousness would be by the law. The purpose of the commandments is to tell us we can't be good enough to save ourselves. We can't earn back our relationship with God in this life, and if we can't earn it back in this life, we won't be able to earn it back for eternity. So, Paul is saying God's got an alternative means of rescuing us. Many people are confused by the idea that Christianity is about us being good and pleasing God. And I suspect that's why the church history is full of arguments about what we need to do and say to be God, to be good. But Paul knew he couldn't be good. That is why he wrote, "The law was our tutor to bring us to Christ, that we might be justified by faith." Faith recognises that we're unable to be what we should be. But it also believes that God knows that and has provided a different option. So then, if we need faith because we can't keep the law, what is faith? Well, most people think faith is a mental idea of having the right thoughts in your head about who God is, who Jesus is, etc. But I've got some good news for you tonight. Faith is far more practical than that. You see, we've just read about a man who Jesus said, you need faith to. But he didn't use those words. He says, you need to sell all you've got and follow me. He needed to do something practical. He didn't say, no, you need to mentally agree with my theology. He said, follow me. There is one chapter in the Bible that brings that home to me more than any other. And it's the great chapter of faith. And it's Hebrews chapter 11. And I want to encourage you to add it to your reading list. Because in it, there are lots of people named. In fact, I've pinched something off the internet. And on the back of that article, you can have a list of all the people named in that chapter. And read it and see. And look at how they're described in Hebrews 11. They are people who put their lives at risk because God said, come this way, walk with me. And they trusted God. Who were they? Well, a few are Noah, Abraham, Moses, Rahab from Jericho, and David. And they're all recorded, not for what they had in their heads, but what they did. And we also know not a single one of them was without fault. The Bible's an honest book. It tells us when its heroes get things wrong, as well as when they get things right. All the commandments were not devised to tell us what we needed to be like, but they were being given to us to tell us what we cannot be like. And the gospel holds out God's alternative way to us. Paul puts it this way in Romans chapter 4, verses 3 to 5. For what does the scripture say? Abraham believed God, and it was accounted for him righteousness. Now, to him who works, tries to do, keep the commandments, the wages are not counted as grace, but as debt. But to him who does not work, but believes on him who justifies the ungodly, his faith is accounted for righteousness. In a few moments, we're going to be breaking bread together. And I want to encourage each of us to ask ourselves, given that none of us can keep the most important commandment, how is you be seen by others in your everyday actions? This week, think, as things come up, how can I show my love for God what I do today? How can that love for God flow out to a love for my neighbours? When we get a bit grumpy, never get like that, do I, Mary? We need to say, how does my reaction show a love for God? Or is it showing a love for me more than a love of God? God knows what we're like. We'll never live up to it. We can go back to him and ask him to help us to trust him, to have faith, which is his alternative to the demands that we keep. Not just the Ten Commandments, but the greatest commandment of all. We should love the Lord our God in everything we are.